Welcome to Collector's Corner, the premier digital art platform.
We help collectors gain and maintain their edge, all while appreciating beautiful art.
Let's jump in.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Cornering the Market from Collector's Corner. Now, Twitter Spaces, going back to weeklies, but there will be a video here where I'm going to cover some of the stuff that we're talking about. It'll be a little bit of a hybrid, so testing this out. But this is the 60-second Cornering the Market, and there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. But before that, some really quick intros. Everybody here on the Twitter Spaces can see. I go by Aston Online. This is my Twitter handle. And for folks looking at the video on YouTube, it's here shown on the screen, at Aston Cloud, joined by my great friend and co-host, Jared, at Jared_Pause, founder of the 8NAP ecosystem, which has a launch platform, the release coming out, a little teaser for an exciting upcoming release, and also Digital Asset Fund. How are you doing, Jared?
Dude, I'm living the dream. I'm excited. They got a lot of like really exciting stuff coming up. We got NFT NYC. I'm going to throw that out there because I know Techno might get some FOMO for not going. But overall, just really, really excited. I was a little bit late because I was actually on the phone with Rich and Rick going over their project that we'll get into. But it's really, really invigorating, man. If you can't tell by the vibrancy of my voice, I'm just super thrilled and excited.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I'm excited for NFT NYC as well. Sorry you can't make it, Techno. He's here in the crowd, but hopefully we can see each other again soon. Maybe Marfa again this year. And excited to see folks who just in person. I feel like it's been a while. But before that, just like a tiny bit of house cleaning. I also wanted to shout out Collector's Corner Premium, my membership for serious collectors and or investors in digital art, which has been... Oh man, I'm really enjoying it. And I'm not just saying that because it's something that I'm running. We have been getting awesome allocations. We got 5 free aligned draws, 3 free nice aunties. We got 5 howdies. Howdy, which is, you know, albeit sort of a fusion of meme coin and art, still doing really, really well. So just excited and love how inclusive the community is. You know, if you're serious collectors, there's artists and folks who are really willing to include you in their project. So anyways, if you're interested in Collector's Corner Premium, please reach out to me, send me a DM. I can give you all the details. And with that out of the way, let's go ahead and kick off the show. And I just
asked him I want to double down on this because I was telling this to a buddy of mine about it. Like, yes, there's a fee for being...
Oh, you got rug, Jared.
I was pontificating, but to put it into perspective, that just one of those things that you just outlined, the aligned draw, right? Got it for free, could sell it for 1.6 ETH today. That more than pays for, I did the calculation. I think it covers somewhere between 4 and 5 years worth of subscription fees. Like, it's not a joke. Like, this is really, really cool group, but it's more than that. And I'm a paying member, right? Like, I want to be very, very clear about this. You're providing really great opportunity for everybody, not just financially, but from a community building standpoint, dude. It's really admirable for those who are not around.
Well, I really appreciate that. And you know, I don't love tooting my own horn, but yes, it is $100 a month, but I think almost everybody in there has gotten that value back, if not more, and not really from airdrops, but just from opportunities we're finding. Like, even the people who didn't win the aligned draws, they knew about it, been talking about it for a while they're, you know, below 0.3 ETH. So anyways, thank you for that, Jared. I appreciate it. And as much as I'd love to keep talking about myself, there's too much going on in the art world. So let's hop in. And, you know, because this is a Twitter Spaces, like, anybody who's in the crowd, like, feel free to hop on and give your takes. Would love to hear them. We want this to be interactive. I'll probably say 5 minutes towards the end of the show to finish up any stories that we don't get to. But out of the way, let's hop in. We'll start off with just some market recaps. And you know, I think I'll skip the sentiment part because it is a little bit mixed here, and we can hit on that if you want, Jared. But I want to go straight to two things. One is this massive CryptoPunks sale that we saw just this week. I can't remember the exact Ethereum amount. I want to say it was like 4,800 Ethereum, but it translated to $16.4 million. This was, let me put up here on screen, it was Alien CryptoPunk, one of nine. Here we go, 4,850 ETH. Second highest sale of all time, second one at the $16 million mark just this month. And, you know, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, Jared. I mean, you know, on the one hand, we're seeing a lot of art NFTs drop in the Ethereum sale price, and really all NFTs. I mean, PFPs have also dropped too. Punks being sort of that hybrid collectible slash art slash PFP. The top end is really moving. And I think this can be maybe a little bit confusing of a picture for folks because, you know, you're seeing some floor prices and really nice art drop, but then at the high end, you're seeing mega sales. So, you know, what's your reaction to this and any read into it, if you have any read into what it means?
First of all, can you hear me? I want to make sure I didn't get rugged again.
Yes, you're good.
All right, awesome. My read into this is, it's like, look, let's call a spade a spade. The obvious play is, like, if you would have just sat in Ethereum instead of art, it would have been a little bit more fruitful. I mean, it's painful to see some of the floors. I won't call anybody out specifically, but some of the floors go down. But that being said, when you look at it, these sales are really, I think some of these major sales are ticking off like some high USD. And then the other part of it, that's one data point that I've noticed in like squiggles in particular, and we'll talk about it later on, is really maintaining an amazing USD floor. So if you're looking at it from that perspective, I think it's very reassuring. Look, seeing two aliens sell and then there's not necessarily like a huge flood into more CryptoPunks, I think is indicative of like at a very high end, people are trying to lock up grails at a very elite level. And I think that that's reassuring because
I think you got a little bit rugged for a second there. You said it's reassuring to see the grails locked up, and then I lost you.
Von Mises had a really great spaces yesterday with Derek from Collab Currency and some of the Flamingo people. And they did a great job touching on this and to kind of surmise what I heard from it. Because I have a tendency to agree, the market is still alive. I think that the early indications are big money are trying to lock up some grails while they're still available. And the belief is that meme coin wealth will eventually rotate inward in addition to new money. And I have a tendency to believe that. I'm just not smart enough to say it happens soon or, you know, within X amount of months.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take. And, you know, as I mentioned before, if anybody here listening in wants to hop on stage and chat about any of this, please feel free to raise your hand whenever. But I think it's fair take to believe that. And look, I think it's quite, you got to kind of look at your perspective, right? It is painful to say, well, you know, I could have, these things are going down in ETH price, I could have just held ETH and bought them now. But at the same time, it's very difficult to time these markets. And I think that a lot of these coins that are going on big runs, they weren't doing much for a while either. Now, you know, you could say, well, it's been like a year and art's been dipping in ETH price. Like I could have timed that. And you're probably right. Like that probably could have happened. But, you know, at the same time, I think you kind of have to pick your strategy if you're thinking as an investor. And if you're thinking as a collector, then, you know, you got the stuff that you really like. And one thing I would say also on the high end, I know we weren't going to call out any specific floor prices, but I was looking at Anti-Cyclones the other day, background of my punk here in the PFP, my favorite collection, and the floor price is down to something like 3 ETH or below 3 ETH. But if you filter and you look at the guide ones, which are considered the most desirable trade there, there's about 82 of them, I believe, the floor price on that is like 15 ETH. And sure, some sold for 9 ETH, so, but still, it's 3x floor. So I think that if you kind of dig into it, the data will show that these grails, as you're talking about, are getting locked up and they are potentially going to be much harder to come by later in the bull run. So,
Well, another data point is, I mean, I shared with you offline who I was speaking to yesterday, but it's somebody with a full autoglyph set, right? And they were approached also for that $15 million amount, and they didn't want to sell. And I know other people who were approached. There's only 8 possible sets. And one individual had an absurdly high number to it. Like, these are going to diamond hands. And it's just, to me, it's indicative of there's a rotation. And it's very, to me, I always go back to the core thesis. You're never going to be able to time things perfectly, but art on the blockchain is something special because it's uniquely verifiable and easily transferable. And I think that that's something that I always go back to. And it's hard to time things perfectly, but, you know, these grails are just not, I mean, think about like Siegfried. He's got the only 7 trade punk. I mean, he tweeted or today about it, like, Alien, 1 of 9, sells for $16 million. What's a 1 of 1 worth? You know, I think that there's something about that, you know, and he could have looked like a fool at the time of buying it for 75 ETH, but now it looks like a genius. So, you know, I have more conviction now than ever, and I'm giving, you know, kudos to those who have the conviction to continue to amass what could be, you know, a generational type collection.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's hard to say exactly what is going to be a generational collection, but I think we're starting to see some signs of this, especially as things go through one market cycle and into the next. And there's a lot of innovation happening out there too. I also want to quickly hit on the release that came out as kind of a market recap here. And this one is from GM DAO. They've released an ordinals platform called GM Scribe, and Richard Nadler released Momentum Mori earlier this week. I want to say it was a couple of days ago, minted at like 0.049 Bitcoin, which is quite a bit. It was around a little over $3,000 at the time. It's holding that floor. And I mentioned innovation because, well, one thing is it's actually very hard to get AI art onto ordinals, or very expensive, I should say. So they had to figure out a way to compress the file size a bit. And I'm not smart enough to understand it all, but it's on their website. They describe that. But also it's holding up really well, given that this, you know, this was not cheap. And in this space, people often try to flip and make some profits. So I think that's a really cool outcome here. Really cool to see, you know, some, and I'm not saying there's none of this, but there's not as much very, very like high quality art collections on ordinals as of yet. So I thought this was a data point to keep an eye on, both from the AI art standpoint and also from the ordinal standpoint. And honestly, from the GM DAO standpoint, I'm actually really impressed that they were able to make that pivot and not, you know, trying to take away from their abilities, but, you know, there's a lot of work, probably a lot of programming that went into like software development that went into being able to do this. And kudos for going and getting Richard, like one of the, you know, better known artists in the space. And so I'll pause there, see if you have any reactions, Jared, and let Steven go after that as requested.
Look, I think it's traditionally a very, you know, Richard starting to find his niche for aesthetics. And I think it's very classically Richard. And I had to echo the sentiment that you have expressed is kudos to GM for, you know, expanding their marketplace and really leaning into the Bitcoin blockchain. It definitely has legs, and, you know, I think this is it's a really cool move, and it's very inspiring to see that from somebody who's continuing to push the boundaries within the art space.
Absolutely, absolutely. Steven, thanks for requesting. And if folks don't know, Steven is also a content creator in the art space, does his own Twitter spaces. But yeah, Steven, what love any thoughts you have?
GM, it's good to see you back in spaces, man. It has been, I don't know, I feel like a year and a half in NFT time, something like that. Yeah, it's
definitely
closer to 4.
Damn, dude, time flies. Look, I wanted to chime in on a couple of quick things that you just said. The big one being Richard Nadler's Memento Mori. I'm really impressed with the collection. And I don't hold the following criticism, but I find it really fascinating that there was like a 3-hour space that like at least half of it revolved around this exact topic, I think on Wednesday night. Within the Ordinal space, like people are really, really either just in it for the flip or they are big time purists when it comes to the on-chainness of something. A lot of the big purists have been highly critical of that drop. I disagree with them. I just do. I think it was a really good drop. And I think that they were very transparent up front, not trying to deceive a collector. But you'll, I think if you dig into it a little bit further, you'll find that like there's a really interesting sect of Ordinals enjoyers who were really, really, really confused by like how certain elements of it were not as, call it, high quality as I think people had anticipated from the previews, which is just kind of insane to me that people are going to take that personally. But the other thing that I was going to say is I will fight you tooth and nail, Aston, on the fact that there's not a ton of quality art over on Ordinals. I'm super impressed with what I'm finding over there. It's just right now they're not going to be on the front page of Magic Eden because, look, that's not where the volume is. You already talked about meme coins. They're going to bounce back in a big way. And you're going to see a lot of collections that have been out here for a while just start to rock it up once it starts circling into art. So, you know, one of these days I'll take you through it. I'll show you a little bit of what I know.
That's fair. So we'll compare lists. Believe it or not, Steven, I have a list of something like 40 different Ordinals generative art collections that I track. But most of them they're just not collections, right? They're more like one of ones or series of one of ones, etc. And that was the caveat I put on there. And you know, actually, my friend Derek Edwards over at Collab Currency talks a lot about networked art, and I think there's something about these collections that I still haven't been able to figure out that creates this network around it. But yeah, I mean, I think this is an interesting debate that probably requires a whole spaces for itself around, you know, what should or should not be included in Ordinals, you know, how high quality does it need to be. But I actually think it's a fantastic transition into our next segment of news and events, because I think, you know, from my understanding, and I don't have a deep technical expertise on this, but from my understanding, it is very difficult to have a reasonably priced mint. And by mint, I mean for the artist to mint the images onto Ordinals when you are doing AI art, because you do want higher quality art with like good resolution there. And unlike generative art, where, you know, generative art is created by code and that code base has already been put onto the Ordinals blockchain. So you can just kind of make a recursive call, as they say, to grab that code and generate your images. And that doesn't take up a lot of kilobytes, right, or megabytes or whatever, whereas the AI art would do that, even one image, let alone multiple images here. And you're probably wondering, what's this transition? Well, the transition is a story that doesn't actually seem super art related at first, but it's about BlackRock. BlackRock, the asset management fund with $9 trillion under management. I think they might be the biggest one in the world. Don't quote me on that. But BlackRock has launched a $100 million tokenized asset fund onto Ethereum. They put $100 million in USDC, onto the Ethereum blockchain. So what does this have to do with art? Well, I think we've been hearing a lot of takes lately about how Bitcoin Ordinals are going to be the place where all the fine art lives because it is a more secure blockchain. I understand that perspective, but I think there's more nuance to this, which feeds into the whole Richard Nadler release and AI art in general, in that there's a limitation here. Like AI art is really, really, really expensive to put fully onto the Ordinals chain. And, you know, okay, so if it can't be on Ordinals, is the Ethereum blockchain secure enough to hold high value art? Well, I mean, BlackRock thinks it's secure enough to throw $100 million onto there. And, you know, they are one of these leading financial institutions. So I think we're starting to see some of the nuance play out where not everything is going to be able to put on or be able to go on Ordinals. And simultaneously, we're seeing a real early stages of a boom in AI art. I mean, I talk about this a lot in Collector's Corner Premium. Jared knows I talk to him about this like all the time. So I think that we're starting to see simultaneously signals to the broader market, to the broader world, that storing your value in the Ethereum blockchain is a safe place to do so. And we're also starting to see some of the limitations when it comes to ordinals for art. So I think we are going to continue to see high value art on Ethereum. And you know, the Alien CryptoPunk was one example of that. But okay, I kind of rambled. Jared, would love to have any thoughts you have on that, and especially coming as a real estate guy who does very large real estate deals.
The 100 million to me, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I think DC Investor does the best to like confirm the conviction on the Ethereum blockchain. If anybody's curious to some of the more finer points of like, of why Ethereum, but to me, you know, what was really a tipping point for the Bitcoin ETF is really, I felt like, you know, BlackRock coming in and really changing the momentum. To me, this is just a sign of confidence in the Ethereum blockchain and the long-term commitment to it as an ecosystem that they want to transact on. So I think there is a spillover effect into our art bags, but to me, this is just a data point and one of major conviction. And one that I really love is, you know, the transparency of the blockchain shows everything. So this might have been in, you know, smoke-filled rooms or, you know, private boardrooms in the past, and now it's all public on a blockchain. So, you know, we're able to take the data and synthesize it in real time. And the fact that BlackRock's made that commitment to the Ethereum blockchain, I think just makes me even more bullish for the longevity of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we are going to see a lot of very high value assets on there. And I think that is going to signal to people who want to collect art that you can safely store your value on Ethereum. And that doesn't take away anything from ordinals, but I don't think the value proposition of Bitcoin being secure is significantly greater or as large as some folks are making it seem like, to the extent that, you know, you'll never see high value art on Ethereum anymore. I guess I don't buy the narrative. But let's move on to the next story. And this isn't news from this week, but as I've been out of the country, I wanted to hit on this and really get your take on this, Jared, and really anyone here who wants to talk about this. Artblox announced on March 7th, so 2 weeks ago, or slightly more than 2 weeks ago, that they are making a few changes. Just sort of quickly summarize it. Basically, they are creating an independent self-publishing studio. It, you know, we don't know all the details, but it kind of sounds like FX Hash or Highlight or some of these other different platforms where anybody can go and release their works. Obviously, if you release an art blocks, it probably comes with a little bit more visibility given the prominence of their brand in the space. Secondly, they're going to refine project selection for art blocks curated, and they will significantly reduce the number of releases. This I find very interesting. I'd love your take on that, Jared, because you know, it seemed like it was a selective process before, so I wonder how they're going to change that other than reducing the number of releases. And then they're going to, you know, keep pushing along with their Artblox engine and share frequent product updates. So I'm not reading into that too much, but the first two stories here, Jared, any thoughts you have on what it means for both Artblox and the broader ecosystem for them to create a self-publishing studio? And what are you expecting out of this update to the curated selection and release schedule?
I honestly more focused on the curated selection, and it's a little bit of a confirmation bias here, but you know, I'm a big proponent of quality over quantity, and I think that a focus on that is really, really, it's positive for the ecosystem. And I think that Artblox is the gold standard for the space. I think that they have a big name, and they have definitely the ability to launch people's careers. So really dialing into like the curation and making sure that these releases are well received and they get the time in the spotlight necessary, I think is a really brilliant thing. I mean, I say confirmation bias because that's the whole core thesis of ADNAP, right? Like limited drops, high quality, and find a good collector base. I think that that's really important. And I really like the pivot. I really admire what they're doing. And then with the first announcement, I think it gives a little bit of latitude for inclusiveness. So that way they can run both parallel paths and still be the stewards of the generative art ecosystem that they have been and at the forefront of that for the last 3 years.
I love it. I love it. So I agree with you there. You know, I'm very curious to see, well, a few thoughts here on this idea of becoming an independent self-publishing studio, assuming that it does emerge to be like an FX hash style where anybody can go and release on there. I'm curious to see what happens to FX hash in that situation. You know, obviously there's been a struggle on the Tezos side. They've updated their their platform, so their releases on Ethereum as well. And I know that's kind of ongoing. And there are a few other open release platforms. Some of them are on L2s like Prohibition. So, you know, just curious to see how that changes the dynamic, especially as artists have to make a choice as to where they release. I'm also curious to see if we see some, you know, some big name artists come back to art blocks, right? I mean, back in the day, they used to have a segment called Playground, and we saw some artists who had really successful releases, like, for example, Matt Delorier with Subscapes come back and release Meridian on that Playground. I think Dimitri Cherniak's The Rapture was also a Playground release. And so do we see some of these artists whose, you know, careers really went to the next level because of art blocks? Do they come back and release something there, even though they're not technically curated? That would be super fun and interesting to see. And on the art blocks curated side, you know, I'm really, really curious as to what is going to change, right? Obviously, there's fewer releases, fine. They want to focus on the highest caliber generative art. But it kind of begs the question, well, why was the caliber not as high right now? Meaning, what about their process led to the caliber of art perhaps not resonating as much, or however they define that? And then what are they going to do differently? And is that change actually going to move the needle, or, you know, perhaps it won't, right? And you know, getting a little bit specific, I have heard comments that you know, the curation board maybe isn't as in touch with the current Web3 collector base. And if that's still the case, you know, they double down on that, it may still miss the mark, right? And I'm not saying that it will or won't. I have no idea. But I will say, broadly speaking, really kudos to ArtBlocks for taking a pause, thinking about how they want to redirect instead of just kind of doubling down. Because I think as the incumbent, as the, you know, really the genre creator, it's very easy to be like, look, we already innovated. We know what we're doing. Like, you all don't know what you're talking about. But instead, they're taking in feedback, and they're really, you know, they're really looking at this and saying, okay, what can we change? How can we continue to evolve and be better? And I think that in a position of power, you don't have to do that. So I really give them props and Snowfro and all the leadership there for doing so. Steven, you got your hand up. Go ahead, Jared, and then we'll go to you, Steven.
Real quick, I'll add, like, I think it's interesting because, like, obviously they bought the marketplace and they're currently blocked on Blur. I just think that they're, well, all of us are like, oh, there's, like, I just think that there's so much happening behind the scenes. Because even, like, when I, you know, I responded to, I think, some part of it, and I was like, oh, wow, to the acquisition of Sansa, I was like, interesting. I bet you there's more going on. I think it was like one of their BD guys, like, responded with an emoji that was like a thinking emoji. And it's like, I just think that while they're like filling in, you know, because it's like you don't want zero releases for X amount of months and people to start, they're being public, but I really genuinely think that they are going to be putting together some, maybe it's Hopium, but I just think that Snowfro is such a dynamic mind and he surrounded himself with some of the most dynamic thinkers in this space. There's just not a doubt in my mind right now that there's something really, really big being built in the background, and it's going to shock us all in a little bit because, you know, Snowfro is just, he's proven on a very continual basis to be a very dynamic thinker. There's no scenario in my mind where something amazing doesn't happen, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally. Steven, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, so to bounce off of something that Jared just said real quick, like, you know, yes, Eric is absolutely a dynamic thinker, and like that's I call that like one half of the argument, right? Why this is ultimately good. But to me, it's a bigger indicator that he is willing, and the leadership at ArtBlocks is willing, to essentially say to the entire market, like, we're not gonna be complacent. We're not just going to accept that, like, the model that we have is what's worked. And, like, yes, that does speak to part of what you were saying about them being the incumbent. But you and I had a really, really good conversation before you left. And in that, we were talking a lot more about, like, what entities like ArtBlocks can do for artists. And I think this is probably one of the first seismic shifts in that, which I'm elated, and I cannot wait to see what they do with it. But it's also a bigger call to the rest of the space for all of their competitors and all the people that aspire to compete with them to evaluate what they're doing and evaluate their actions. And ultimately, it's going to push through competition to improve everyone. FX Hash 2 days ago came out with a really, really honest announcement in their server, and they basically said, like, look, we have been rolling out half-baked features for months, and we need to be doing better. We need to get the UI and the new improved interface rolled out, and we need to refocus. So, you know, yeah, they've, you know, launched on ETH. They've added, you know, the ability to mint to base. But there's still a lot they need to be doing better as well. And I think that as more of these marketplace players come to the plate and have that realization that they need to reevaluate, it's going to be a lot better for the artists. And that's what I care about.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, hopefully these platforms want to partner with Web3 native art media companies as part of that, you know, not to be too biased here, but I do think that it's, you know, it's also like, how do you draw attention to your art in this space, right? Like, I was thinking about this, and in the traditional art world, most of these sales will happen in galleries, or there'll be some kind of exhibition, and the people who are interested in buying these things have to physically be there. Like, you have a captive audience, but that's almost by definition not the case online. You could have 15 screens or tabs open that are vying for your attention simultaneously. So I think that trying to understand how to drive more attention to these artists and to these releases on a platform level, I think could also be part of that. Or, you know, like I said, partnering with some folks. Anyways, we'll stop tuning my own
horn. you talk about, like, the relevance of storytelling and really honoring the art, not just being like a financial vehicle. And I think that that's important. And I hope to, you know, it's something I'm leaning into, you know, and we talk about very frequently, but I also think that I hope to see more of that. And, you know, being the incumbent and being the leader in the space, I hope they'll, you know, pave a new road and really raise the bar for others to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what they have in mind. And, you know, who knows? One last self-serving comment. Hopefully these friendship bracelets get incorporated back in, because I got to say, I really love them, but it's sad to me that they have not really been in the limelight for some time. But let's move on and let's talk. I'm actually going to go ahead and skip the great art at great prices, or let's say we'll circle back to that. And Jared, I wanted to go to exciting upcoming releases and talk, give you the floor here to talk about the 8NAP art debut coming out on April 23rd, Rich and Rick, whatever you were able to share right now.
Yeah, this is the next progression of their project. I call it the maturity and the further development. I think that you saw, you know, their miniscapes as the first starting point, a lot of nature, moving into a Sekia with a dynamic motion. And this to me is the next logical progression. So I'm super stoked to have this art be the first project on the 8NAP art platform. And quite honestly, you know, I was on the call with them going over just our weekly check-in on the progression of the art. And every single time I see the art, it gets me more and more excited. So April 23rd, Aspen and I are talking about a co-branded, you know, happy hour at NFT NYC. We're going to do a dinner and some other stuff. We'll leak out a little bit of the art, but dude, it's super invigorating. I've been a huge fan of Rich and Rick for a long time. Big collector of Asekia. I just couldn't be more stoked to have such a great set of partners for the first launch. I think it's really going to set the cadence, and you'll start to see exactly how great the storytelling and the art can be when done properly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm really excited for you. I'm really excited for Rich and Rick. You know, I think that these two are, I believe they are the top, let's call it graphic artist, generative artist duo out there. I love their style. I love what they bring to the table. Their collections are very, very high quality. And it's just really cool to see them continue to build on that and evolve and
I will add to
build that partnership.
That duo, it's a perfect complement, and there's a great duality in their perfectionist through and through. It's really cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. So mark your calendars, folks, April 23rd. And kudos to you, Jared, for getting this across the finish line. I mean, there is a lot that goes into this from, all the nuances of working with an artist, to the technology, to the marketing, to, you know, keeping everybody happy. Like, it's really, really congrats. Like, I know there's more work to be done, but this is a great milestone, and really happy to see this, and happy for you and Rich and Rick.
Yeah, and I'll say this is only the start, right? Like, there's a lot more artists lined up, some of them public, some of them not public. So I'm really excited about, really leveling it up and helping a lot of these artists take their careers and everything to the next level. There's a lot more to 8NAP art. You can see it on the website, but we're really trying to be this artist accelerator, right? We want to be the place where people go to level up their career and get the tools necessary to take them to the next level. So just, there's so much amazing stuff going in the background. There will be a time and place to share it more, but just freaking exciting, bro. Like, this is such an exciting time.
Yeah, absolutely. Steven, please go ahead.
So if I can just chime in with a question real quick. Jared, there's a good, few people in here that are listening right now, I know, that are artists or that know artists that are going to probably, refer out to what you're doing at 8NAP, probably in short order here as they learn more. And obviously, with not a ton out there that you haven't, yet shared, I am going to kind of put you on the spot because I'm kind of curious if I can get at least a little nugget of alpha out of you. What can artists expect that have partnered with you for 8NAP in terms of the differentiating things that you're doing to help up-level them that others aren't?
No, that's good. I appreciate you pulling it out of me because I don't necessarily similar to the way Aston led in, I don't like to brag a ton, but Delta's one of my artists. And we're talking about his collection. It's going to be long form. We go into details about traits, the psyche of collectability from a collector side, and really trying to, I have a philosophy of, failing to plan is the same as planning to fail, right? So we're doing a lot of the front end work to help set the artists up for success. And then, as far as stuff that occurs on the back end, we're doing, getting access to executive coaching, getting personal branding experts to complement them, and then really just serving as a one-stop shop for getting, and then honestly, it's listening to the artist and what their needs are. Cause not every, I have a bag of tools and tricks, so to speak. And not every single one is applicable to every artist. It's listening to their needs and how we can help them grow. But those are two of my, the ones that I'm fairly public about, is the executive coaching to help them level up. And then the personal branding, because as much as I can at 8NEP, you know, partner with the right communities and get a project out there. You know, my hope is that an artist will come back and see the value in partnering with 8NEP. But at the end of the day, all of us are our own best advocates and getting the best branding, you know, advice in the space and getting a couple extra tools there to level up that success is really what I'm hoping to do. You know, I've taken lessons from my corporate life, you know, 20 years in the corporate world, and I've had the privilege of having access to a lot of this stuff to help me level up and really giving artists the ability to at the very least have access to this sort of stuff.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. And I appreciate you letting me put you on the spot for that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Jared and I have spoken about this privately a lot, and I think a lot of this will come to light when he's ready, but it's really this, I think there's, like, for me, two big takeaways, and there's more, right, but the two things that I narrow my focus on with 8NEP art is, one, just, like, giving the art the time to breathe, right? It's not, like, cranking out release after release, and, you know, no shade on platforms that have faster release schedules, but it takes time. It takes time not only to spread word, but to put these things together, to craft your narrative such that it's digestible for people. And that's a process. And I don't think that you want to rush it to do the art and the artists, to do right by them. And secondly, there's so much more that goes into any career than the product of what you do, right? There's psychology, there's all sorts of stuff. There's, like, how do you position yourself? How do you brand yourself? And, you know, whether or not you are an artist, or, like, all of these things matter, right? I think that we can lose sight of that and be like, oh, it's just, like, you know, let's make good art and put it out there. But there's more to that. And I think that taking that 360 degree view and look at this person as not just an artist, but, like, a human who has a career and everything, I think that's important. And so I think it's a great approach. And like I said, I think there'll be more that comes out, and it's just exciting to see that. So appreciate you pushing forward with this, Jared, despite the difficulties, especially in a what feels like a down market, but it's not really in my mind. Actually, we'll transition to the other release that I wanted to talk about just very quickly. So this is Los Angelizing by Margaret Murphy, coming out on the 25th of March, 2 p.m. on Verse 25, post photo AI collections, all focused on Los Angeles, all with a really wonderful sense of surrealism. I might have to change the term post photo AI to just, like, photo surrealism, because I think that's actually a little bit more accurate as to why this art is interesting. But this is really, 25 pieces, all individual auctions. I think it's worth checking them out. I actually really, really like this collection, especially having lived in Los Angeles myself. And I think that we are just seeing this broader wave towards this photo and video surrealism, typically enhanced by AI. It's on Verse. This is actually in collaboration with Tender. So kudos to the folks over at Tender for helping make this happen as well. There's just a lot of this stuff coming down the pipeline these days. And I'm really, really excited by it because I love this art. So, Jared, I'd love to hear if you've had a chance to look at this collection, and if so, if you have any thoughts on it or the broader trend. Oh, Jared may be tied up. Well, if you're able to get back on and chat about it, feel free, Jared. But in the meantime, I am going to just shift over to Great Art at Great Prices, one of our favorite segments. And I wanted to start with Factura by Matthias Issekin. I've mentioned this many times, and yes, full disclosure, I'm a holder of these. But I'm a holder because I really like this art. It's, to me, this is generative art done just right. Great balance of traits, great balance of palettes, great balance of visual compositional variety, extremely collectible. You know, Stephen and I have a date to talk about what that really means, but I think, you know, you can find pairs, you can find your favorite style and really dig into this collection, 1,000 pieces. And I brought it up because of GM Dao. I feel like GM Dao is, you know, kind of in the limelight because of Memento Mori, as we talked about earlier in the show. And this collection is sitting at a 0.15 ETH floor, so right around that $500 limit that we like to use for great art at great prices. So wanted to call that one out. And I got three across chains. So that one's on Ethereum. The second one I wanted to talk about, actually, when I teed this up, it was still minting below 500. But this one is O's. O's by Nathan Crones, I believe.
Sold out.
It did sell out. It did sell out. When I wrote this, it hadn't sold out yet. And so now it is on secondary at $600, so slightly above. But, you know, I got a chance to chat with Nathan many times over the past few weeks about this. Really, really nice guy. Great artist. And this is really cool code-based generative art on ordinals that is very dynamic. And every time there's a new block on the Bitcoin blockchain, which is about, you know, on average every 10 minutes, these artworks, they change. I won't give away how, but check it out. And congrats to Nathan on the sellout for this collection and getting it across the finish line. As I was saying earlier, it is not easy to get anything across the finish line in this world. And the last one I wanted to tee up here, Jared, I don't know if you're here.
I think I'm unrugged. How about now?
Yes, I can hear you now. I threw up Miniscapes. I did it for you. I figured you wouldn't mind. Sitting at 150 Tezos floor. Thoughts on Miniscapes?
I love Miniscapes. I think they're, you know, the phrase I'm trying to coin for this group is generative minimalism. I just think that there's something beautiful about Miniscapes, and at 150 Tez, like, to me, that's such an attractive price point given, you know, the minting prices of all this other stuff. But I just think it's this beautiful genesis project for the duo, and it's you know, it's a starting point for what I believe to be is a very, you know, amazing partnership with a lot of longevity. I think it's an amazing piece of art, and anybody who's not familiar with it, it's literally just very minimalist, very traditional, almost like Rick Crane type minimalism, and these landscapes in the landscape view. It's just beautiful. I love the simplicity behind it.
Yes, totally. And I love that term, generative minimalism. I think that's perfect. They even describe it here in their project page as they are creating minimalist landscapes intended to charm, delight, and surprise. And I think it certainly did that. These minted at 9 Tezos and are still holding 150 Tezos floor. But lucky for us, it is still below our great art and great prices threshold. And I want to just shout out, you know, here we at Collector's Corner, we are not chain maximalists. Our great art, great prices span Ethereum, Bitcoin, and Tezos. So, you know, lest anybody tell you that about us, it is not true. Let's finally round it out with some art or artists to highlight. I actually picked two art collections to highlight, although there is a story about these artists as well. The first one is Strata. By, you know, his Twitter handle is Evergreen Dazed. So I just say that because I actually don't know how to pronounce his name. His first name is Alkan, I believe, but I do not want to butcher his last name. Sorry, Alkan. I will learn how to pronounce it properly and then say it all the time. But Evergreen Dazed is a 1,000 piece collection, another photo surrealistic collection, but one that is, man, just so good. And you know, Alkan kind of came on the map through a fellowship, post photography perspectives too, with a collection called Something Symphony, Overpopulated Symphonies, which was 300 pieces, and has followed up with this one. That one centered really around large crowds in different situations, and that's really what made it striking. This one is mostly landscapes, not really humans in any of these, but what really struck me about this is that they blend so well together. A lot of these pieces have this like very surreal optical illusion where on half of the piece it looks like one scene and then it really blends well into another scene and it gives you all these, optical illusions is really the best way for me to put it. So it has me continue to come back and look. I actually think, I hate to rank things, but this is my favorite AI collection on Solana. Oh, I should mention this is on Solana. And it's just really good. I just think it's really, really good. So I wanted to call this one out. And Jared or Steven, I don't know if either of you have seen this, or any thoughts on this one. I'll pause and see if so.
I at least thought it was an interesting drop. it was in the report this week, and I think might have made it into the report the prior. But I thought it was different. It felt, yes, minimalistic, but I don't know. It had a very different vibe, and I think that as more and more generative artists start jumping into the space globally, we're going to see different approaches to it, different thought processes that guide their creating. So I'm fascinated by it, and I just look forward to seeing more out of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So really cool work there. And then the last one that I wanted to highlight is this is a well-known collection, but Life in West America by Roope Reinisto. And the reason I wanted to highlight this is because, I think people who are new to space, or people who maybe weren't quite as actively following the art space a year plus ago when this released, like this was like such a big deal to see so many different collectors across different communities be like, whoa, what is this? And I think that this collection will trace back a lot of this photo surrealism, video surrealism back to life in West America, because it really opened everyone's eyes to the possibilities of what this AI art could look like. And, we're now seeing a trend of AI art really follow in these footsteps. I mean, most recently, Nice Aunties, Auntiverse by Nice Aunties has been really, really popular. And there's just been a lot following along this style. And I don't think it's a mistake. I think this is some real innovation. And I know myself, I had almost zero interest in the earlier AI artworks, not because there was anything wrong with them, but it just didn't resonate with me. There's no logic to it, but this really drew me in. And I think a year later, we're starting to see how the legacy of this collection evolved. So I thought it was worth double clicking and highlighting this one here. Truly, I said that Strata is my favorite AI collection on Solana. This is my favorite AI collection, bar none. And yes, I do own some, again, because I like it, not for any other reason.
I would say I think that these are amazing pieces, honestly. I sadly do not own any. Because my favorite AI on Solana is actually Smile, as funny as that may be. But these are absolutely stunning. And I think that there's some really amazing outputs. The one of my favorites in the entire collection was Sniped by Blockbird, who, if anybody knows Blockbird's collection, he's just got one of the most outstanding eyes in the industry. If you don't believe me, go check out his wallets. But yeah, these are really dope. I think there's a long way for these things to run, and such a great collection. And the cool thing about this, Aston, you and I talk about it all the time, it exists as a collection too, right? Like, each individual piece is stunning, but it could also function independent or collectively, and you kind of know where it comes from. So very well executed, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually think that is one of the bigger challenges with AI art collections is, why is it a collection? What is the commonality of theme throughout all of the pieces that makes you recognize that it is part of the same collection and not just different individual works? And I will shout out Delta Sauce, who's listening in the crowd here, with his Views collection, which I thought did this really brilliantly, better than I've seen in most AI art collections, where there's a very clear theme here. So I think that artists are recognizing this, and there's just so much great art. Like, it's hard to be upset about anything, honestly. I still feel blessed to be able to spend time just looking at this stuff and experiencing it with such awesome people and awesome artists. And so that is the show. Any parting thoughts, Jared? Oh, you might have gotten rugged again. You're still on mute. Well, I guess before we close it up, if anybody here in the crowd wants to hop up and say anything, or we'll see if you have any parting thoughts, Stephen, while we give Jared some time to return. Don't have to say anything if you don't want to, but give you the floor if so.
Well, I appreciate it. I always have no shortage of things to say, so I figured I'll give Jared his time to prepare. The thing that I'm watching most right now that I think is really interesting is the emergence of disruptive platforms. And in one such case, they literally branded themselves as the Disruptive Gallery. They've got some really incredible people lined up to release with them. And I don't think that's just by accident. So if you're not yet familiar with Disruptive Gallery, I would take a look. I am willing to be transparent about the fact that I own none of their artwork. I am not incentivized to say anything about it. I just think it's really interesting. They're debuting with Matt Deloria. He's got a collection dropping with them called Filigree, and it's very much so leaning into the idea of starting generative and then using AI as a toolkit or as an instrument in crafting that artwork or refining it. So to me, I think that's the start of something that is going to make real waves and encourage a lot more generative artists to start testing AI further within their own work. The other thing that I wanted to bring to your attention, because I don't know if you were able to follow it, GANs seem to be getting a lot more eyes lately. And I would really suggest checking out the lesser-known AI artwork from OXFAR, who had collections over on ETH and has since pretty much dedicated himself to dropping on Bitcoin. He dropped early GANs, a collection of early generative, GAN artwork that he had originally created back in 17 and 18. And he minted it on Bitcoin. And some of the outputs are phenomenal. Like, it's not even, it doesn't make sense on some of them. One in particular just so happens that I got lucky and minted it. But you can see a couple of pieces, like the one that I have, which is Painter's Dream, that almost, they almost feel like Monet. And I still can't believe I'm saying that, but it definitely has that type of vibe. And it reminds you of water lilies for sure. So I would be keeping an eye on how people are deploying AI artwork over on Bitcoin, because it's going to continue to evolve and people are going to be discussing stuff like upscaling a lot more as time goes on, because it's going to be the only way that they can get smaller files to actually work on chain over there. So yeah, it's interesting times across the board for sure, but I would keep an eye out.
No, I really appreciate that. And you're right. I hadn't followed that as closely. I will say in a smooth-brained way, I just assumed that everything that FAR is releasing is going to be really popular because he is such a big name in the ordinal space, and the ordinal space is so hot, notably known for Taproot Wizards and their collection that is already out, Quantum Cats, which I think is like a 0.3 Bitcoin floor or something. It's quite expensive and hyped. I actually own a couple of FAR works, War Games from back in the day, if you know that one, and did not know about those, though, so I'd love to look into those further. And this is really intriguing to see how the technology evolves, because now it's making me think that perhaps some type of AI, some forms of AI art, perhaps the GAN-based art, are a little bit more, I should say, smaller file sizes, and there's potentially different techniques, I guess, to be able to get those onto the Bitcoin blockchain. So even if these photorealistic style AI art is too expensive to get over there inscribed on an ordinal, maybe there will be some of these GAN-based works. And it also makes me wonder about Rafik's works, which feed data and transform that data into visuals. And again, I don't know enough about that yet, but I appreciate you bringing that up. That is super interesting.
I think I'm back here, but I'll say, Steven's talking about platforms that can disrupt the status quo. And I will conversely throw some, you know, just kudos to you, Stephen, for A, coming up, but B, being so knowledgeable and really trying to enlighten everybody along the way. I think that in order for the space to grow and for all of us to have opportunity and obviously our bags to grow, I think individuals such as yourself have to come up and help familiarize others to the space and give them the confidence that, you know, it's safe and friendly, and it's the only way we're going to, it's either going to be a zero-sum game or we're going to all have to grow the space. So I'm more leaning towards the grow it, and your knowledge is always impressive. So thank you so much for sharing everything today.
Absolutely. Really appreciate you, Stephen. Appreciate everybody who was listening. So going to give ourselves just a little plug again really quickly. If you want to hear my content that's more focused on collecting some of the best art early and affordably as possible, or investing in the best art, check out Collector's Corner Premium. You can DM me, AstonCloud, send me an email, collectorscornernft@gmail.com. Would love to have you, love to show you around. April 23rd, we have 8NAP Art debut launch with Rich Poole, Rick Crane. Do not miss that. Check out Jared if you want to follow all things 8NAP. And he's got a fund, which is doing very well, I hear. Although I don't want to put you on the spot with that one, Jared. And for everybody listening or on YouTube, really appreciate you. We'll be back next week. And check out our Substack. I'm writing these stories out there as well if you want to get it all condensed in a shorter format. So without further ado, I hope everybody has a fantastic weekend. If you're listening later on Monday when this is going to be published, hope you have a great week. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back next week. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for tuning into Collector's Corner. We really appreciate you taking the time to listen. If you like this episode and want to help us out, please subscribe and leave us a review on your podcasting platform of choice, like Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and follow us on YouTube. Please also follow us on Twitter for announcements as we expand to other social and content platforms. Our Twitter handle is @collectors_XYZ. We'd also love to hear any feedback you have, so please comment or reach out. We're always striving to be more useful and get better so we can help you in your collecting journey. The Collector's Corner team and their guests are not registered investment advisors. All views expressed on this podcast are personal opinions and are not specific inducements to make particular investments or investment strategies and should not be relied upon for investment decisions. This show is solely for informational and entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, please consult a professional.